Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specking, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin. Press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your call. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa is here screening your calls. If you're listening to us online right now and you want to join in, the phone number to dial, 347-884-8327. That'll get you in on the live call. You can listen along on your phone, or you can press 1. Lisa will screen your call, and you can jump in and join us with a question, a comment, topic, whatever it might be. Now, I know I said this last night, but I'm going to say it again tonight. If you've got a question, let's get them in early. As many times what happens on this show is I spend a lot of time in the beginning talking because I don't have a lot of questions in the beginning. And then in the last 15 minutes, everybody has a question and I end up not getting to them all. It was really bad last night. I must have quit the call with 10 questions waiting last night. And in the first 30 minutes, I only had a couple. So if you're going to have a question, let's get them in early. Tonight is wide open phone lines. We can talk about anything you want. I'm going to actually carry something forward that we kind of finished with last night because I saw all the hands go up, so I think there was a lot of comments about it. And, Bubba, I know you're listening. This is for you. Bubba thinks that I have flawed logic when it comes to the split speed limit rule. So I'm going to clarify a couple things on that. If you want to talk about that, we can. Let me start by saying this, though. This is a debate that I can never get very passionate about because I really don't care. When you drive 57 miles an hour, which I did for years in a truck, you could care less about speed limits. They just don't matter. Doesn't matter if you were in Ohio or California, if it was 55. Just didn't matter. You're never going to get a ticket at 57, and traffic just doesn't bother you. So I really don't care about split speed limits. The reason I bring it up once in a while, and I'll debate it once in a while, is because I think the people in the industry who are against them make the wrong arguments. And that's what I was trying to point out. So after I talked about it last night, we kind of ended on it. Bubba started a forum saying that my logic was flawed. And here's his thought. He believes that if just a couple of trucks are going slow, that's not a problem. I say slower trucks are safer trucks. There's a ton of data to back that up. Slower vehicles are safer vehicles. Speed is one of the major contributing factors in every type of accident. But the argument that he's making is if we slow down all the trucks, then the trucks become a hazard and it becomes dangerous. I don't know that I would completely disagree with that. But here's my point. Bubba believes that I'm using this to justify my mantra of slowing down to save money. Well, I don't have to justify that. I'm not justifying anything. I drove 57 for years and it does save money. I don't need to justify that. It's the opposite. It's the people who want to do away with the split speed limits that are trying to justify. And here's why. They're trying to justify saying it's unsafe. Well, if it's safety that we're really concerned about, we wouldn't be arguing to let the trucks go faster. We would be arguing to make the cars go slower. And nobody ever argues that point. To say that making the trucks or allowing the trucks, let's say that it's a 70-mile-an-hour speed limit state. To say that allowing the trucks to go 70 makes the state safer isn't really true. It would be better if we lowered the speed of the cars so that there isn't a differential. That would be the thing if we were concerned about safety. But they're not concerned about safety. They're concerned about allowing the truck to go faster. I really don't care. Let the trucks go faster. It doesn't matter to me. I'm not going to, but I'm not the one justifying anything. They are. That's the problem. And they're making the wrong argument. If they were really concerned about safety, they would argue to slow the cars down, not speed the trucks up. If you set the speed limit at 70 for everybody, you will still always have vehicles going 55 to 60. You're always going to have that speed differential, and there's nothing you can do to the people who want to drive 55. You can't give them a ticket. But if you set the speed limit at 60, then you can ticket the people who are going faster. So we could control the differential much better if we set a lower speed limit. So again, if it's the differential and safety we're worried about, the people on the other side of this are making all the wrong arguments. If we set the speed limit at 70 for everybody and we're worried about speed differentials, what do we do on hills? Trucks will never be able to maintain 70 miles an hour going uphill. So now we have a huge differential again. Cars are going 70 plus if the speed limit's 70. Trucks are down to 45 or 50 because that's as fast as they can go. So if we slow the cars down, then we won't have as big a differential. Things would be safer. So if you're going to argue against split speed limits, and you're going to say that it's safety you're concerned about, then you should be arguing to slow everybody down, not speed everybody up. But see, the argument really isn't about safety. The argument is about fairness or convenience or whatever. You want the trucks to be able to go 70 miles an hour. Fine. I don't care. Knock yourself out. Let them all go 70. But don't make the argument that you're concerned about safety and you want everybody else to go faster. Just doesn't cut it. That's justifying. All right. Let's see. I'm going to get to some phone calls, and I know we have some people that want to talk about this. So let's go to Bill in Pennsylvania. Bill, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Hey, I think the point that you're missing is that if the trucks aren't allowed to go faster, then they're never going to have the momentum to be able to go even the speed limit that's set at 55.
Well, of course they can. We can go 55 all day long.
No, I'm talking about when you get to a hill or when you get to a pretty good pull, they lose the momentum. Where if they're allowed to go 70 or faster, then most of the guys that have got sense are going to, you know, maybe not use every bit of speed they can do. I mean, you talked yourself about going 55 or 57. But
If it's safety we're concerned about again, if you take the average run from the East Coast to the West Coast, what is the percentage of time you're on a grade in that from the East Coast to the West Coast?
You know, I don't know. I run Pennsylvania quite a bit, West Virginia.
Less than 10%. So we're going to argue that we should allow trucks to run over 70, 100% of the time, so that we make them a little safer 10% of the time. And when you start talking about long grades, I don't care if the truck's going 90 miles an hour when it hits the bottom. It's still going to be going the same slow speed when it gets to the top.
Yeah, but
short
it's
grade,
to going that,
you might think.
It's going to be going that slow speed a lot less. I think one of the things that is misunderstood is speed is not the danger factor. A lot of times when they have an accident and they say, oh, speed played a big part of that accident, I disagree with that. I think most of the time speed gets blamed. It's not speed, but it's the fact that they're following too close to the truck in front of them or car in front of them. If they would
but
get more room...
There's a direct correlation to how fast you're going and how much distance you need. So when we slow down, we don't need as much distance. Two of my trucks have the VORAD collision warning systems on them. And they've even got smart cruise, so the truck will slow itself down on cruise to maintain a safe speed. When you're going 45 miles an hour, that VORAD system will allow you to stay pretty darn close to a vehicle in front of you because you don't need a whole lot of stopping room. You get that truck up to 70 before I turned them down, and you have a huge cushion that the system forces you to keep. At 70, that distance is almost unrealistic in the real world. It is really tough to maintain that distance because it's too big and everybody keeps jumping in it. But if we slow down to 55, that space cushion gets much smaller, and now it's much harder to get into that cushion.
Yeah, that's the point I'm trying to make, is the faster speed doesn't really affect the safety as much as when
Absolutely.
The guy goes faster, he don't leave as much room in front of him.
Correct, because he can't in the real world. Let's talk the real world. He can't keep that distance.
Yeah, not permanently, but you can maintain it. Somebody pulls in front of you, you give a little bit more. For the most part, if you run with the flow of traffic, then you can keep that distance.
But the distance is smaller, it's still the speed that caused the accident. How about rollovers?
Yeah, well, rollovers is a different story. I mean, that's speed. That there's no way to cut. But I'm talking about rear-end accidents.
So we really believe that a vehicle at 70 is safer or even as safe as a vehicle at 55. Because if anything happens, if a tire blows out, if a car swerves into the other lane, if any of those things happen, now our time to react has been drastically reduced. But at a slower speed, we have much more time to react. We're much more likely to avoid the accident.
Yeah, but using your logic from earlier, you know, on a given life of the truck, how many times are you going to blow a tire? How many times are you going to have those? I mean, you know, you want to cut the speed back for that 1/110th of a percent of the life of the truck? I'm saying that an experienced driver can drive at a faster speed and not be any more dangerous at 70 than he can at 55. If he's got sense enough to know to slow the truck down and give himself plenty of room in front of him. It's not the speed that causes a lot of the issues in most of the accidents. But
you'd have to argue with the researchers because they say the exact opposite, that it is the speed, because it cuts down our reaction time in every situation. So no matter what the situation is, when we're driving faster, we have less time to react to it. And again, sometimes I wonder why I even debate this, because I don't care. But I just think if you're going to make the argument, there is no way logic says when we let all the vehicles go faster, we become safer. It's not true. If we're concerned about safety, slow everybody down. That'll be safer. Let's go to Indiana. Gary, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How you doing?
Doing good. What's on your mind tonight?
I can see the argument on both sides. What the accidents that happen from the split speed limits are rear-end accidents. Let's say you got a truck going 55 miles an hour. You got another truck going 55 miles an hour by his speed limit, but the speedometers are different, right? So you get a truck that's doing 55 coming up on a truck that's doing 53 because of the difference in speedometers, and you got one and he's passing him, okay? Now you got a car doing 70 and he's not paying attention, and he rear ends a truck. That has happened. It happened in
Of course it happened.
A lot.
Of course it happens, but if we're concerned about that, let's slow the cars down to 55.
You're not going to do that because they've got more voting power than we do.
That's fine. I understand that, but let's not make the argument that we're concerned about safety, because we're not. If we're concerned about safety, we would fight to slow everybody down, because then we would be safer, because You can't stop that speed differential by allowing a faster speed for anybody. That speed differential is always going to exist. Some trucks. What do we do with all the fleets because of fuel costs? What are we going to do with all the fleets who, because of fuel cost, have turned their trucks down to less than 65? Mm-hmm. That's becoming more and more common all the time. And now we set the speed limit at 70 for everybody. We still have the differential. We have all these fleets going 62.
Right. But you still have the voting block of a car. A car can do 75 in a 65-mile-an-hour zone, and the cop will not, will not pick on them as much as a truck doing 68 in a 65.
Okay, now we're getting to another point. We're getting to another pet peeve of mine. The problem comes down to we're not enforcing the laws we already have.
That's a big issue in this country right now. That we
absolutely.
We're picking and choosing what laws we're enforcing.
So my whole point about split speed limits, really, is I could care less about them. Doesn't affect me. Never did. My point in this debate is, let's make the right argument as an industry. Let's not, because if not, we will be defeated. I mean,
right. I agree with you that we're using the wrong argument because the voting public will see us as, well, the trucks just want to go faster.
Exactly. That's my only point because I don't care about it. I find myself now getting excited about it, but I could care less about this issue. It's just when it comes up, it makes me crazy that we continue to make the wrong arguments and we continue to say we're so concerned about safety. Well, if we were, we'd be making totally different arguments. It's not about safety. It's about the fact that we want to be able to go as fast as they allow the cars to go. That's really what it's about.
Before I go, I got four words for you.
Okay.
Arizona has it right. We'll see you later.
There you go. At least you know how to count. That tax ambassador can't ever count how many words he's going to give us. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Lance, welcome to the program.
Evening, Kevin. I have two questions for you. One is on if someone were to buy a tractor and they wanted to buy it for personal use, like an RV, is there any is there a different way to register them? I asked my state of Illinois this, and they said it's a Class 8 vehicle. It'll always be a Class 8 vehicle, even if I'm going to use it as a toy.
Yeah, it's a Class 8 vehicle, but that doesn't make it a commercial vehicle. And
right.
the problem with this issue is there are so many different agencies involved that there's no clear treatment. We have to figure out what it is we're trying to do. Like if I want to take a Class 8 tractor and make it into a motorhome, if I just drive it down the road as a motorhome, I don't have to have a CDL. I don't have to have a logbook. I don't have to file lift the fuel tax. But if I take that same motorhome and I put any marking on it, I'm dealing with this right now because we've been talking about putting a truck, on the road as a show truck and doing the show mobily from the road.
We're basically wanting to put a show truck to go to the shows for our charity. That's all it's going to be. It's not going to haul freight. Just go to shows.
Here's where you run into the problem because this is what I'm finding. If I build this motorhome, I would like to put, Let's Truck down the side of it and put our logos and things like that so people identify it when it's going down the road. The minute I do that, it now, even though it's not for hire, it's still a commercial vehicle because we're using it for a commercial purpose and we're advertising it all over the side of it. And DOT will pull you over and enforce every rule on a vehicle of that weight. So if it's more than 26,000 pounds, logbooks, if the tax, everything, they're going to enforce it. Now, if you drive it down the road and it looks like a motorhome and you don't put any of that signage on the outside of it, then you can say, it's just a motorhome, and you're not subject to any of those regulations then.
Yeah, okay. This almost seems like it might just be easier than to run it under as a as a commercial vehicle. I mean, we're not worried about the log and all that. It actually comes to be a licensing issue. In Illinois, it's extremely expensive to register a truck.
Well, and that's why I say there's so many different issues, because the regulations, once you're on the road with the DOT, that's one issue. And if they perceive you as a commercial vehicle, they're going to enforce all the rules. Licensing in the states becomes another issue. And every state treats this differently. Every state has different rules. So that's why it gets even more confusing. But I know I was talking with somebody about this, and they pulled race cars. So they had the big toter home set up with a, you know, really long trailer. They got pulled in Florida to the scale because they were over length. And when they checked, they were not – they had their race logos all over the truck, and they weren't treating it as a commercial vehicle. No logbooks, no fuel tax, no nothing. By the time Florida got done with them, they had $8,000 in fines.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah, one other thing, too, is, you know, there's this debate, like in Pennsylvania is one of them, on toll roads. They're wanting to make the rest of, I guess that's what, 76 toll road. And every time I hear this, I get going, I almost wonder, maybe we're looking at it the wrong way. Why don't we just make all the interstates toll roads for everybody that uses them? We're already, as trucks, are taxed per mile, basically, like a toll road. What would be wrong with making every interstate a toll road? That way the cars are paying, trucks are paying. Maybe I'm just not thinking about it right.
Well, there might be some logic to that if we were able to do it right. And what I mean by that is I would much – and we could apply this to a lot of things that we currently pay taxes for. Instead of paying taxes, let's start – applying user fees instead, so that the people who use more of the government infrastructure or services, the people who actually use it more, pay more. That would be a better system than just randomly taxing everybody. Well, it's you know, and people get crazy when I say this. If I don't have any kids in the school system, why am I being taxed to pay for a school system?
Exactly. Well, I just want to look at that.
If I don't use the interstate, it's got to be such a problem. Yeah, if I don't use the interstate in your example, why should I be paying taxes to build and maintain interstates? Start turning our tax structure into a user fee structure. I'd be all for it. But the problem is we get toll roads on top of all the other taxes. If we're going to go to toll roads, I'm okay, but we need to wipe out a whole bunch of other taxes then.
Right. Well, that's the thing. New York, I don't know if they still do it. It used to be if you were on the New York toll rate, you weren't taxed. I don't know if they still are or not. I would think if they made it to where all the interstates were toll roads, all fuel bought and used on the interstate shouldn't be taxed, right? Because you're
correct.
Already paying a user fee. It didn't seem that complicated to myself, but.
No, I agree. I think that for many government services and infrastructures, we could convert to user fees so that the people using them are the ones paying for them, or the people who use them more pay more. People who use them less pay less. I think really, when it comes to schools, I think the government should just get out of it completely, but that's another show.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. And the one thing, if you travel very much, our interstates are in deplorable condition right now. I sure as hell hope our government can handle the health care system better than they can taking care of roads.
Oh, you know they can't. I mean, it's nice to say, but you know they can't.
Right.
Our health care system, you're welcome. Thank you. Our health care system is going to be full of potholes and, you know, bad stretches, just like our roads are now. You're right. They're in horrible shape right now. I've been on the road quite a bit. Let's go to Texas. Ronald, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Kevin?
Doing good. What's on your mind?
Two things. I want to weigh in on the split speed limit. But before I do, I want to know, you say that people who are for the split speed limit, which I don't care one way or the other now that I'm an owner-operator, but you say they're using the wrong argument. So what's the argument that you would use if you were for that?
That's a tough one because I the only thing, I mean, you almost have to come out with the truth is, and the truth is, why are we being singled out to go slower? You know, if you're going to allow cars to go 70, then you need to allow everybody to go 70. But don't make the safety argument. Just make the fairness or equality or whatever and say, look, if 70 is safe, then 70 is safe for everybody. We should all go 70. Because if we're making the argument about safety, then we would have to be saying, look, you need to slow the cars down, not speed us up.
That sounds good enough. I've got, and as far as the split speed limit goes, when I was a company driver, that was when I really cared about the split speed limit and wanting to be able to go as fast as everybody else because I got paid by the mile. So the more miles I could get in, the more money I made.
Absolutely. I understand why people want to do away with it. I just think they're making arguments. And like you, it didn't matter to me, never mattered to me, never will matter to me. Because at 57 or 60 miles an hour, doesn't matter what speed limit they set. It's never going to be an issue.
Right. And now that I'm an owner-operator and I see the fuel saving, you know, it really doesn't matter to me. But there is one it's kind of bad. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. So the one time now that does bother me with the split speed limit is I think here in Texas, in some places, they have a split speed limit. And I know in Montana, they have a split speed limit on two-lane roads. And I hate it because it's one of those times when, you know what, make everybody go the same speed because you constantly have cars that are able to do 65 or 70 and the truck's only doing 60. These cars are coming around and making it a dangerous situation for me and my truck because they've got to pass me. Sometimes they barely squeeze in front of me, but with another truck coming the opposite direction because they're always trying to keep their speed up and get around us, you know, and that bothers me.
I absolutely agree, but we have to put logic here again. They can't force you to go faster, right?
No, not at all. And go ahead.
Yeah, so they have to slow the cars down then. If this is a problem, and I agree with you, on a two-lane, this really becomes an issue. But the only real solution to the issue is to slow the cars down because if you make the speed limit 70 for everybody, it's not going to change you and I. You and I are still going to drive 60+.
Yeah, and I think that 60, which a lot of places in Montana, it's 60 during the day for trucks, 55 at night on some of those two-lane roads. But for the cars, it's 65 or 70 on those I think it's 65 in Montana for the cars, but they're constantly at odds with the trucks. And on the interstate, I could care less. They've got two more lanes or at least one more lane to go as fast as they want to go and come around me and do what they want to do. But when they start making it dangerous for me or where I've got to start hitting my brakes to make sure this guy doesn't kill himself with a head-on collision coming in the direction, that's when it bothers me.
I agree.
Appreciate you letting me rant. Have a good night.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Dan in Montana. Dan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey,
first time I've ever called in. I'm the Asphalt Cowboy on the Let's Truck website, so I know you read a lot of my stuff. But you were talking with Lance a little while ago about the toter home commercial vehicle thing. Key word that a lot of DOT officers will consider is the potential for earning any money, especially in Florida. I've been on the wrong end of that a couple of times, and you can be hauling a busload of retirees to go play bingo, and they can consider that a commercial vehicle.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to be very careful, and there are lots of ways that they could say you were a commercial vehicle. You're right. One of them, the obvious one, the one they will get you for every time, is if you put any kind of graphics on the outside of that vehicle. Once you put anything on it as far as graphics go, DOT considers that a commercial vehicle. It doesn't even matter what you're doing with it anymore. I rode with the Highway Patrol in Colorado, which is basically they have all the duties of the DOT out there. And I was surprised because I was riding with them just to learn some things. And the very first truck he goes to pull over is a dually pickup pulling a I don't remember, it was a front end loader. It was some kind of construction type equipment. I can't remember what it was on a tandem axle trailer. And he said he could pull those things over and write tickets all day long because just by the setup he knows the weight and he knows they're over the 10,000 and they're almost always commercial vehicles, even if, whether they're marked or not. And, you know, he'll pull them over and, you know, right away, if you're smart, you'll say, it's my own and I'm taking it to my property to do whatever. And that's actually what the first guy we pulled over said. And the DOT officer kind of laughed and he said, look, he said, I know that guy's out doing landscaping or construction jobs. He says, I'm not going to, you know, get crazy on him. He said, but we could write those kind of tickets all day long because those are commercial vehicles and nobody treats them like that.
Yeah, and every state is different as far as what their weights are. I mean, for example, in Idaho, it's only 14,000 pounds.
Yeah.
And it's all open to each individual state, each individual DOT officer's interpretation of their own laws. So somebody from, you know, Iowa who's, you know, traveling, you know, maybe going to a car show in Florida, hauling his own car, hauling a car to a Barrett Jackson auction. He has the potential to make money, even though it's in a motorhome and an enclosed trailer. You can't see what it is. That is still considered a commercial vehicle in the eyes of some DOT officers.
That's a big problem because there's no consistency in how everybody treats this.
Well, we're going back to a lot of stuff. There's no consistency in a lot of it in that, we're talking about the split speed limits and we can never have any consistency in the enforcement of the laws there. You know, as far as it being, you know, safety, it's not about safety. It's about money. And the only states that are still following those laws are Oregon, California, you know, places like that they're after the almighty dollar, and that's all it boils down to.
I agree. No question. And that's why I say it's an issue that I rarely get too excited about until I start arguing it. But I really don't care. But you're right. It's not about safety from either side because, like I said about a dozen times already, if it was about safety, we'd slow everybody down. We don't care about safety.
Yeah, I mean, but the fact that there have been numerous studies that have gotten, you know, states like Ohio and Indiana and, you know, different states to back off of their split speed limits is because there have been a lot of studies saying that it is more dangerous. It's not about the actual speed. It's the difference in speed. If
correct.
You've got vehicles,
but if we were concerned about safety, we wouldn't have sped the trucks up.
Well,
we would slow everybody down.
We would slow everybody down, and that's it exactly. But it's definitely not as safe if you've got two different entities traveling at different speeds, you know, as opposed to everybody doing the same speed, be it faster or slower, then everybody's going to have the same reaction distance, whether everybody's going 50 or 60. You know, everybody's going to have the same reaction, but if you've got people that are going 50 and people that are going 60, there is a difference in that too. The people going 60 aren't going to have as much time as the people going 50, but people going 60 in the cars, they have cars that will actually respond faster than a truck. You know, they will stop faster. That's granted. But if they are going, you know, if you've got one person going 10 miles an hour faster than the other, then everybody is on, you know, they're not going to stop at the same time. But if everybody's going, they're going to have the same reaction time.
when we allow speed limits of 75 miles an hour or 70 miles an hour, and we have the trucking industry saying, look, we need to slow down. We can't afford to run like this anymore. Now, whether there's a split speed limit or not, you're going to create a speed differential because you've allowed traffic to go faster, much faster than the trucks are going to go. It's the same thing on hills. You get to a hill, you can't tell a truck you have to go 70 because that's the speed limit. I mean, the truck can't go that fast. So we've created that differential again. And if we're going to argue that it's the differential that causes the problem, then the only solution is to slow everybody down so that we have that differential happening less often. It's the only logical answer. Or to say, look, you know, if we allow everybody to go 70, the roads are still fairly safe. They're never going to be perfectly safe, but we're okay with the safety at 70. We just think everybody should go 70. That's the argument the industry should be making.
Well, yeah, I will, you know, I'll agree with that. But I'm going to say this goes back a long time. There's an old Jerry Reed song, Lord Henry Ford, What Have You Done? And there's a line in that where he talks about if you take every car end to end and stretch to the moon and back, but some fool would step out to pass.
That's right. No question. Good stuff. All right. I am going to get to another call. Let's go to Bob. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How you doing?
Doing good. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I think, you know, part of the issue is if the law enforcement people would enforce and we had more signage about the keep in the right lane unless you're passing. Too many people get in the left-hand, you know, we used to call it the speed lane, and slow traffic down. Trucks are guilty of it, too. You see two trucks trying to pass each other and slowing traffic, and you end up with you know, a quarter mile of cars all backed up. And I think law enforcement, you've got a speed differential anyway, but if people would just stay in the right-hand lane except when they're passing another vehicle. The Germans have been doing it with the Autobahn, and you're talking about tremendous speed differentials, maybe up to 100 miles an hour. In fact, it's interesting. The German car manufacturers, it took them a long time to figure out that the Americans needed coffee cup holders because their philosophy was, how can you drive a car and drink coffee, so why do you need a coffee cup holder? Because they had the Autobahn. And,
That's right.
You know, I would love to see a cop pull somebody over for doing 65 in the 75-mile-an-hour or 70-mile-an-hour lane. Also, you were talking about, I just want to make a quick comment on, you know, fair taxation. You know, the gasoline tax per gallon is supposed to be a fair way. If you're not buying gas, you're not using the highway. The bigger vehicles that do more damage to the highways typically burn more fuel, so it's self-compensating. So the gas tax, if they would save it just for the highway trust fund and use it for highways, we'd be in great shape. So
yeah, you're right. That is a that's a good example of a user fee more than a tax. It's a user fee. The more I use the road, the more fuel or gas I have to buy, the more tax I pay. I love that. That makes much more sense.
Well, except the politicians rape the system and use gas money for other projects. But that's why anybody that's familiar with farming, you know, the diesel fuel for farm tractors is a different color to because tax has not already been collected on it. So it's and they know that fuel's not going to be used for the highways. So it's,
yeah, and your first point, it has always been a huge pet peeve of mine, people who just drive in the left lane all day long. And even when they're going slightly faster than the rest of traffic, it doesn't mean you should hang out in that lane all day because somebody out there wants to go faster than you do. So pass in the left lane, move back to the right. When it's time to pass again, go back out into the left lane. And if it's three lanes, travel in the middle, pass on the left, exit and enter on the right. I just wish that driving schools would stress that much more than they do.
Hey, I saw a Tennessee Highway Patrolman doing probably 75 in the 70, had to hit the brakes really hard, slow down. Somebody was 65, and I said, okay, somebody's going to get pulled over, at least a lecture, a ticket. The cop just sat there for miles. I couldn't believe it.
Now, you're right. First of all, we need to stress that rule much harder in driving schools so that it's, you know, that people are taught that when they're learning how to drive. And then we need to have some sort of enforcement for it on the road.
Yep. Absolutely.
All right. Good stuff. I appreciate it. Let's see. We are off to Greg in Ohio. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Kevin. If I wanted to order the truck that you built, how much is that truck?
The signature truck?
Yes, sir.
We would have to really sit down and price it again because prices on the glider kits themselves have changed. And every time we build one, it's slightly different because somebody will come in and they'll say, you know, I want this, but I don't want this or this, or I want all those things, but let's do this differently. Just to give you an idea, though, we're probably with today's glider kit prices, if we were to do everything that we did on the signature truck, we're probably in the 115 range.
That's not bad. And how soon till you rebuild the truck, the used truck you keep talking about? Now, that's what I'm really excited about.
We have got, actually, I'm the one holding up the project at the moment. We're doing this project with several different people, but the real driving force behind this is going to be Fleet Air Filters. David Kuntz is the one who will be doing the majority of the reconditioning work, and he's also going to own that truck and operate it. So he's ready. I mean, he's excited about this. I'm the one kind of holding things up because I haven't found the truck that I want yet. But literally any day we will buy the truck and get started on this project. And he's thinking probably, what did he tell me? I think 6 to 8 weeks to complete it. So, I mean, we could be done. I would say that as soon as I get on the ball here and really get serious about finding the truck, we should have the project completed within 90 days, I would say, at the outside.
Okay. And I recently bought a truck, and the clutch is acting a little funny. I wanted to see what you thought. I pushed the clutch to the floor, I put it in gear, and I let it off an inch, and it goes to grab it. I take it out of gear, I let my foot off the clutch, put my foot back on the clutch, put it back in gear, and it goes to grab it at a different spot. So it's not grabbing at the same spot ever, you know.
Huh. I don't think I've ever seen, I'm trying to think back. I don't think I've ever seen a clutch act like that. This isn't a Volvo, is it?
Yes, it is.
That's why. They've got that, the hydraulic assist on most of those.
Yeah.
My guess is it's a problem in the linkage and the hydraulic assist itself, not the clutch.
Okay. Well, I will have my mechanic look in that direction. So.
Yeah, and that was the reason I asked. The Volvo clutches are a little weird. I've dealt with them over the years. I've never seen one act quite like that, but that's not going to be in the clutch assembly itself. It's going to be in the linkage, and it shouldn't be that tough to find and figure out. If you are on the call and you want to join us, we've got lines open. If you've got a question, press 1 on your phone, and we will get to those. I've only got one or two more to get to, so jump in now, and I'll be getting to those here pretty quick. Let's go to Larry in Orlando. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How you doing?
Doing good. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I've got an 06 Pete. It's a car hauler, and we both know that's not the most aerodynamic thing in the world.
Right.
I took it in the Rush Truck Center. This is a problem I've been dealing with for about a year now. And the oil temperature has them going up. It'd run about 240, and the coolant's at about 180. Took it in the Rush Truck Center. They hooked the computer up to it. They said, well, we could do two things. I said, okay. He said, you can leave the gauge alone, or you can turn it off. I said, do what? He said, yeah, there is no oil temperature gauge, or there is no oil temperature sensor on that truck. I said, okay, so where does it register? He said, that's just a guesstimate from the ECM.
Really?
Is what it is. Yeah, this is Rush Truck Center in Winter Garden.
Okay, if it's a guesstimate from the ECM, in order to make a guesstimate, we still have to have input. What input is it using to make the guess?
He said, and he called Caterpillar on this one, he said it takes what the coolant temperature is and adds 25 to 30 degrees. Go ahead.
That's kind of worthless.
Thank you. You know what? That's exactly what I said. I said, why do I have a gauge in the truck at all? That's what the gauges are for, to let me know how my engine is doing. I said, well, is there an idiot light to let me know if the oil's getting too hot? Well, no, there isn't. I said, okay, so if my oil cooler takes a crap, how do I know? He said, oh, I guess you don't.
Well, you would. And I guess it, you know, for years there was never a differential really between oil and water temperature. The oil temperature was completely regulated by the water temperature.
Right.
And then when we got into, you know, oil coolers and we started running engines at different temperatures, but what would happen if the oil started to get too hot? It would raise the water temperature, and if the water temperature could keep the oil cool, you'd be okay. If it couldn't keep the oil cool, you would see the problem in the water temperature would rise too hot, and we would trigger a shutdown.
Right. Well, I put the OPS system on the truck, too.
Okay.
So I took up the hole in the oil pan, or I guess the oil temperature sensor would go. But I was going to get your input. Should I put a gauge, an oil temperature gauge, on the truck?
You could. I'm not really sure that it's necessary. I mean, it does seem kind of screwy, but we do know that ultimately the water temperature is going to regulate the oil temperature to a degree. And if for some reason we're not able to cool the oil through the cooler itself, then the water temperature, the coolant temperature, is either going to compensate or not. And if it doesn't compensate, we'll shut down because of a high water temperature.
Yeah. See, that was – I said, so if the red light goes off and the engine light goes on and it throws a code in the ECM, I said, well, do that? He said, well, yeah. I said, so what does it mean? He said, that doesn't mean anything.
Right.
I said, that's so nice, being the truck's under warranty.
Yeah, you could put a gauge in. I'm not sure that it's completely necessary because we will, you know, they're always going to run, two temperatures are always going to run somewhat in tandem. Hold on a second here.
This is weird.
Hey, is that Hugh?
Yeah, I don't know why I'm here, but apparently I am.
I think you figured out a way to hack into my calls. How did you get here?
I'll tell you, your board called me. I got you on two different lines here. Because I'm sitting there listening to the show, and my phone starts ringing, and I answer it, and it's you.
Well, you know who we have to blame this on.
Yeah, Lisa, because she's not here.
Right. I'm pretty sure it was her that did this. She does this just to screw me up.
What did I
do?
Well,
you think you screwed you up?
What did I do?
I'm just riding along here listening, you know? Somehow or other, you patched me straight in, Lisa.
No
screening or anything.
I love that. See what happens when you text me?
Well, you're asking for calls because you only have one or two on the board. And Lisa said, let her know if I want to get in. So finally, we got to talking about something that I had a question about. And so I hit one, and nobody ever screened my call. So I text Lisa that my hand is up. And next thing I know, the board's calling me somehow or another.
And here you are. That's,
Joe,
you know,
about, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you can't beat the service.
I hear you. Talking about speed differentials and following distance and so forth, there's something that I've talked to a couple of drivers about here lately, and I've actually got a good 25 years under my belt, spread out over about 30-something years, but 25 years actual driving, probably over 2 million miles, and I've never really kept track of. And I'm really still having a problem with the general consensus that a loaded truck will stop, has a shorter stopping distance than an empty truck.
Where is that being claimed, I guess?
Well, just about everywhere. I mean, ever since getting, you know, safety training provided by carriers, and I've had DOT officers, safety representatives, and I've seen it in print that a loaded truck actually has a shorter stopping distance than an empty truck. And I've had other trucks tell me, yeah, that's true. You know, with having driven probably over 2 million miles, both empty, loaded, light, heavy, and have hit the brakes a number of times over those years. That's not a theory that you necessarily agree with.
Well, you know, I've never thought about it, but you know, somebody must have tested it somewhere. I mean, with all the safety testing we do, we must have some data on this somewhere. I've just never read it, but logically, maybe prior to anti-lock brakes, there might have been an issue where with an empty truck, you know, trailer brakes will lock up pretty quick. And you know, we have a bunch of people who've never driven a truck without anti-lock brakes, so they wouldn't even know it. But it seems to me after anti-lock brakes that a lighter vehicle will obviously stop faster than a heavier vehicle.
Well, apparently it's not so obvious because it's out there. But then again, you know, the older I get, the less clear things are to me. I may have this totally backwards, but I've asked a couple of other drivers about it, and they're agreeing with me that they've been taught over the years. That it takes longer to stop a light truck than it does a heavy truck.
Well, that seems to defy physics.
Well, okay, great. Well, that's all I need to know. I'm not totally crazy.
No, you're not. Now you've got me curious again because there absolutely has to be data on this somewhere.
Some source for that information, yes.
Yeah, I'm going to go look for it.
Well, we've got about 7 minutes. Maybe somebody on the line can tell their experiences or what they've been taught over the years.
Maybe so. Hey, I think I have another problem here. I don't know how we did this, but you're not showing up on my switchboard anywhere.
Well,
so,
sorry about that.
You.
Hey, I'm as confused as you are.
I have.
Well, you think that's weird? I've got you on two lines.
Yeah, I see that.
But Lisa, who's the 217 call that's in the screening room?
I'm
217.
Huey. That would be Huey. That's the line that I called him on. I have no idea how you got him on the other line.
Well, I don't know why he's in the. All right, I'm going to take that one out of the screening room. And try to hang up on that one. and see what happens.
Yeah, that's probably me because I got my hands up on that other line.
Oh, well, you know what? You're still here, though, aren't you?
I'm still here.
Hey, I have no way to hang up on you.
Okay, I can do it. Hold on a second.
Okay. All right. I have no way to put him on hold or anything. I don't know how we manage that.
Okay, I think I just eliminated it out of the line. Do you still see it?
We're calling you a hacker, Huey.
Yeah. You hacked into our phone here.
I'm an inadvertent hacker because I have no idea
how. You're a hacker.
All right. Well, Huey, all I can tell you is you either have to hang up or you have to be quiet because I'm going to another call.
Okay.
All right. Good talking to you. Stop hacking into the system here. Let's go to, Greg in South Carolina. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey there.
Can you hear me okay? Don't know that I've ever heard you address this one way or the other, but I have kind of butted heads pretty hard with a safety manager at my company. I'm a owner-operator leased on with a major carrier. And there's a huge brouhaha stirring, and apparently there are drivers being put out of service for using bungee. The way it's been spun to me is because they're using bungee cords to secure either a load lock or something to their catwalk on their truck. Anything. You can't use a bungee cord at all, is what I'm being told, and I have combed over the regulations, and that is not what the regulations say. There are specific guidelines about what you can use as far as some things, but there's a clause in there that says that the listed items is not a complete list. You can use any other item you want. And then when I point that out, they're falling back on, oh, well, the 393.112 says that anything you use must be adjustable, and there's no adjustment mechanism on a bungee cord. It's called an S-hook. That's not a mechanism.
Here's what you're going to run into. I agree with you.
Uh-huh.
And we could go over the regs, and you're correct, but the carrier, if this comes down to a carrier issue, the carrier is always allowed to... I don't want to say make their own regs, but the carrier can make their own rules as long as they're more stringent than the regulations, not less. Do you know what I mean? They
as long as it's a company policy or something, yes. I mean, if they want to just arbitrarily enforce it one truck at a time or something, they want to, I mean, if they want to put it in a handbook and make it a published policy, absolutely. They can say anything they want to do about their,
And thing. That's what I think, that if it comes down to an argument and that's the way they want it, then I think that's what they're going to end up doing. They'll make it a company policy, and as long as it adds to the regs, not takes away from them, then they're going to be able to do that. But as far as the regs go, I believe you're correct.
Well, I'm sure I've questioned it with the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration regional office in Atlanta and my state office locally, and the officers I've spoken with all agree that that's what the regulations say as far as my interpretation of it, and there are interpretations listed on the website for each of these things that get into very much detail. And I pointed out that, one of the devices, securement devices that's listed in the regulations is cordage, C-O-R-D-A-G-E, which means rope. And there's all kinds of specifics about the diameter of the rope and the working load limits and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, well, when they want to fall back on the adjustability, I'm like, well, how do you adjust a rope? You unsecure it from its anchoring, increase or decrease tension, and re-secure it. Well, how do you secure a bungee cord? The same way.
I agree.
I think
when it comes to the regs, you're correct, but ultimately if the carrier decides that they don't want bungee cords, then they're just going to create a policy that says no bungee cords. I think I know you're correct. It might be a losing battle. I'm not sure. All right, we are all out of time, and as usual, we've got a bunch of hands up right at the end of the show. Sorry I couldn't get to you. Try again next week. Stick around. The live show's coming up in 30 minutes. Remember, be safe, be profitable, be responsible, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.